This is Ann Arbor Stories. I'm Rich Ruddy. The first motion picture ever screened in Ann Arbor was The Great Train Robbery. The 12-minute silent Western flickered on screen at the Light Infantry Armory at the corner of Ashley and West Huron on September 26, 1904. It was shown at the end of a sold-out 7-part program that featured minstrels, jugglers, and handcuff king Fred Gay. Moving pictures were a growing form of entertainment at the turn of the century, and between that first screening of The Great Train Robbery through 1907, a trio of permanent Nickelodeon theaters sprung up in Ann Arbor showing movies. The Theatorium, the Casino, and the People's Popular Family Theater, later renamed the Vaudette, all opened in succession between 1906 and 1907. These Nickelodeons, so-called because they charged 5 cents for admission, were easy for businessmen to set up and cheap to run. Find an open storefront, buy a projector, and some folding chairs, and most of the heavy lifting was done. Hang a clean sheet on the wall, and most important, get a piano or an organ and someone to play it to provide the background music these new silent films required. Along with the three new Nickelodeons, Ann Arbor also saw three new vaudeville theaters set up shop, showing movies along with other kinds of more proven entertainment. The Bijou, the Majestic, and the Star Theater all opened in 1907. These vaudeville theaters also charged 5 cents for admission and weren't much bigger than the Nickelodeons, but they each had a stage that allowed them to show live entertainment too. Singers, acrobats, trained mules, that kind of thing. But this isn't a story about the cinematic history of Ann Arbor. This is a tale of another sort. And for that, we only care about the Star. Not because it was a great historical landmark that has stood the test of time, not because it was owned by a great man, or a gangster, or a famous murderer, or a thief, or a mad magician. No, we care about the Star because on St. Patrick's Day, 1908, it was the site of the biggest riot in Ann Arbor's history. The Star was a dingy single-story space located where Arbor Brewing Company is today. It had a stage 15 feet wide, suitable for acrobats, singers, dancers, and comics who played to packed houses of students and Ann Arbor's working class. It was run by a man named Albert Reynolds, who previously ran a billiard hall and cigar store near campus. There's only one really good photo of the Star, pictured in all its glory shortly after it opened. A big star-shaped sign hangs over the sidewalk, suspended 2 stories up by a giant iron pole drilled into the building's facade. Light bulbs outline the sign, as well as the word Star in all caps nestled inside. The front of the building is plastered with cheap, mismatched wooden signs. 8 in all, if you don't include the 11-foot monster towering at the curb out front. No font matches the one next to it. Everything is all caps. They read, "The world's greatest moving pictures do everything but talk. Big double show every day. Yes, this is the place where life is worth living. Cool and comfortable Star show." Early 1900s marketing. The Star doesn't look like the nicest place for a night out, nor has it been described that way. And 5 cents, even back then, wasn't a lot of money. The clientele was, predictably, a little rough around the edges. Reynolds hired tough people to work with tough crowds. And Jacob Slimmer was tough. A burly amateur boxer, Slimmer had 2 jobs. One was usher, and the other was to read from pre-written cards and narrate the motion pictures at the Star. There's no record of whether or not he was any good at his job, but evidence suggests that Jacob Slimmer didn't take much guff from anyone. On St. Patrick's Day in 1908, Slimmer was narrating a film at the Star for a modest crowd of students and blue-collar townies. He stood at the rear of the theater as the light flickered on screen during a tense moment in the film. "Frantically," Slimmer read, "the hero chews the cord that binds his wrist as he struggles to free himself and save the fair maiden from a fate that is worse than death. Will he save her?" A voice at the front of the theater hollered, "He sure will if he's been cleaning his teeth with rubiform toothpaste." Slimmer put down his script and walked to the front of the theater, where he located the young comedian, and smashed him in the jaw with a big meaty fist, tenderizing the young U of M student with lefts and rights until he lay on the dirty floor unconscious. A classmate leapt into the fray to exact revenge and was similarly beaten to sleep. The theater cleared quickly. Students sprinting back to campus, sounding an alarm quicker and louder than if sirens were attached to buildings for just such an event. Through the dorms, fraternities, sororities, pool halls, the cry went out. One of their own had been manhandled at the state theater, and justice must be served. Streams of co-eds coursed down Washington, Liberty, William, looking for Slimmer and aching for retribution. Slimmer wasn't stupid. He skedaddled immediately after the initial fracas and was never seen again. The first voice of Ann Arbor Silent Pictures vanishing forever and leaving the owner, Albert Reynolds, and his wife to manage the near riot. Did I say near riot? I meant riot. It didn't take long for authorities to hear what was happening. Students were tearing apart the Star Theater. The 8-man Ann Arbor police force, plus a few special officers paid to guard city landmarks, rushed to the scene. Members of the Ann Arbor Fire Department joined them as well. But it was no use. The rioters tore policemen's uniforms off their backs and made off with their helmets, while others stole the firemen's hoses and forced the fire chief to call for a full retreat. Estimates put the number of rioters at as many as 3,000, attacking the theater in waves, with gusto, using bats, loose cobblestones, and conveniently, 3 wagon loads of bricks piled across the street at a construction site. They threw every last one of those bricks, shattered every piece of glass that could be shattered, dented and destroyed that big star sign. They tore out the seats, smashed the organ, ripped down lights and scenery, and made the theater 4 walls and a pile of debris. Albert Reynolds and his wife cowered in the basement under police guard while the students raged above. The police and firemen tried to intervene, but there were too many rioters and not enough room in the jail. 22 undergraduates were arrested and dragged down the street, but it was a drop in the riot bucket. As day turned to night and the rioters smashed big pieces into smaller pieces, U of M President James Angel and law school dean Harry Hutchins strode down Washington to calm the crowd, which respectfully parted in their presence. An unsmashed box was procured for Angel to stand on. Elevated in front of the star, he addressed the crowd. "Gentlemen, this is deplorable," Angel spoke. "We wish you to follow Dean Hutchins and me home and go to bed." They listened quietly to Angel's plea, but once the speech concluded and the crowd failed to disperse, Angel and Dean Hutchins were ushered out of the crush to safety, and the rioting promptly resumed. By midnight, the rioters had rioted themselves out, slowly returning to campus, leaving the remains of the star behind. The damage was estimated to be as much as $2,500, somewhere north of $65,000 in modern times. As part of a plea with the courthouse to release 15 of the arrested, groups of students roamed campus with tin pails, collecting money to repair the star. When they turned over $1,000, the students were released. 3 pled guilty to loitering charges and were fined $4.60 each. The star was eventually repaired, though to what extent and how well we'll never know. It continued to show movies and host shows until 1919, when it closed its doors for good. But this isn't a story about the cinematic history of Ann Arbor. Really, we just cared about the riot. Ann Arbor Stories is presented by Rumble Pack Media in partnership with the Ann Arbor District Library. This episode was written and read by me, Rich Reddy, with recording and sound production by Brian Peters. Thanks, as always, to the Ann Arbor District Library and their amazing archive staff who continue to help us locate and research these stories. Thanks especially to Lucy Rohrig for her help researching the riot at the Star. Please follow us on Twitter at Ann Arbor Stories, or drop us a line at annarborstories@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you thought of this episode or any of the previous stories we've told. Thanks again for listening.